Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Suspense Radio Live. I am your host, John Robb, along with my co-host, Matt McElreath, and I'll tell you, we got a great show for you tonight. We got author Scott Nicholson and Yerky joining us.
Also, we are going to talk about a few books that we've read, some books that we're going to be reading, give you a couple kind of reviews on those. We're also going to have a four-way suspense smackdown later today. We're going to talk about which actor best played Jack Ryan in the Tom Clancy books as converted over to the movies. So get ready for 60 Minutes of Suspense Radio, and it starts right now.
All right, Matt, so I'm telling you right now, we had a fabulous show the first time on Sunday. I thought it went really well, and we had a great weekend. I mean, it was funny because at least you finally saw the movie Inception, which I've been begging you to see because I thought it was really good. So what did you think of it?
I definitely recommend it for everybody. If you want to talk suspense, you want to talk some twists, you want to just have a good old action sequence thinking man's or woman's movie, definitely recommend it to everybody. It's a great movie.
Absolutely. Leonardo DiCaprio did another fabulous job. Kind of. I don't know if he's getting stereotyped in those roles, kind of like he did with Shutter Island, where, you know, it was kind of his wife, you know, battering back and forth with him a little bit, but it was definitely good. Speaking of great picks of the week, why don't you go ahead and start off with your picks of the week on our book selections?
Well, this week, I'm recommending Mark Greene's book. It's called On Target. It is another spy thriller. I say another because that seems to be my favorite, so I'm kind of locked into that right now. But I like the whole intrigue, the conspiracy series, so that's kind of my pick to click this week. Johnny. Hey, everyone. Not sure if we're still on the air, but going to actually roll right.
Yeah, something happened on that one. I don't know what happened, but I think we're back. But, you know, it's the internet. What are you going to do, right?
Hey, there you go.
You know, what are you going to do? So pick it up where you were, and we're, you know, get the kinks knocked out of it here.
Well, I was just kind of telling everyone my pick and click kind of for this week, which I'm not quite done, but reading Mark Greene's On Target. I also read a book by Stuart Neville called Collusion, which is a follow-up to a book he wrote called Ghost of Belfast, which features an ex-IRA hitman, Jerry Fegan. Fegan basically is struggling with his past of all the people he's murdered and is trying to make right by that. And Collusion kind of picks up on it from there. He's basically trying to track down an assassin who's actually trying to track him down. It's a very interesting concept. So that's another book I recommend, another series I recommend if you haven't read Collusion by Stuart Neville. It's also under the Jack Lennon investigation set, so definitely recommend those.
Well, again, I went for the trifecta. It's very difficult for me to just bring out a couple because there's just so many great books that are coming out, especially in the summer. Seem a lot of them like to hit in the summer and then closer to the holiday season. So my book here is by best-selling author Tess Gerritsen and her newest book, which is Ice Cold. Now, a lot of people might know Tess from her series, the Rizzoli and Isol series, which is now on TNT as a TV series. So that's very exciting for her. And this Ice Cold is another book in that series. Right now, Angie Harmon and Sasha Alexander play those characters on TNT. Been watching that show, and it is right now very exciting. We're enjoying that a lot. The second book that I have tonight is by Liz Wheel. This is her second book. Her first one was called Face of Betrayal. This one is Hand of Fate. It is a triple threat novel. And a lot of people might know who Liz is by not really by name, but more along the lines of what she's on. She is one of the Fox News legal analysts on the Bill O'Reilly show. And she did an outstanding job jumping over here and starting to write suspense thriller books. And again, it's Hand of Fate, which is a triple threat novel. And she does a fabulous job with this one. The last one I have is by Kat Richardson, and it is called Labyrinth. It is a Gray Walker novel. This book actually hits stores on August the 3rd, so you definitely want to make sure that you have yourself down to check this book out because Kat Richardson is a fabulous author. She has a great character here. And it's definitely a book that you want to check out. So, speaking of great books, you know, we have a couple good authors on today that we're going to have is Scott Nicholson and Shane Yerke. And, you know, it just kind of brings us back again to, you know, we kind of talked a little bit about, I think, in the pilot episode about the e-books and the stuff that's going on, you know, with and the funny thing is, we were reading an email today by John Gilstrap, who was saying, do you remember when we were talking about that one, where he said he looks like his ebook sales are actually going to outsell his print sales. And I kind of find that a little fascinating since, you know, he is a best-selling author, and all of a sudden, you know, the ebooks are starting to outsell the prints. That was a little intriguing to me. Seeing as how people are, I don't know if they're, you know, quite into the, you know, the Kindles and things yet, but someone's reading them without a doubt.
And I'm going to get into a little of that with Scott a little bit later in the show, as he's looks very ebook savvy, selling his books on there. So we'll get some of his thoughts on that as well. But it's pretty cool how it's all kind of taken off. I don't know how maybe the older generations, maybe the baby boomers, might not pick it up too fast, but definitely the younger.
And I don't know. And what's our generation? You know, I mean, because I'm 39, you're 39. What are we? Are we kind of like the limbo generation?
We didn't agree on giving our ages up here. We didn't agree on that.
Oh, okay. So I'm 29, and you're 29.
You're tail end of the Cold War. That's who we are. That's why I guess I like all the spy stuff. I was always scared of nuclear war, so we're the Reagan years. I don't know what you call us, but I don't know what
you call our generation either. But it seems, you know, this is kind of the age, our generation, that, you know, is either, you know, we're grasping technology or we're not grasping it. We're just kind of getting into it. But there's definitely a lot of things going out there. So why don't we go ahead right now and bring in our first guest? Like I said, he is a best-selling author. His latest book is Torn Apart. And Shane, we would like to welcome you to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on board today.
No problem. How's everything in Illinois going on right now?
So far, so good. It's warm and humid. The words were not coming from me today, sitting down and trying to write. So I spent most of the day just fixing stuff around the house, which cleared my mind out very nicely, all that sweating and cursing hitting my thumb and all.
Now, do you find it harder to write in humid weather?
I do. It's, you know, you got to stay inside the house with the refrigerated air going on, and I get a little bit restless. So it's actually my favorite writing conditions of all time is the late, you know, like late fall, early winter. It's 20 degrees outside. I crack in the middle of the night. I crack open the window just a little bit, let the wind howl in. And
right.
It's just being the computer, and it's like, man, the words just pour out.
Well,
and just make sure you're not somewhere where it snows so Annie Wilkes doesn't get it, right?
Well, you know, I read Torn Apart, and I literally tore through the book. And if people don't know, I'm not one of those readers who can sit down and read a book in a day and a half or 2 days like some people can. But your book was definitely one that I went through because it was so fast. You had, you know, so many things going on, and it was fascinating, the writing, because you had five different angles going on at once. You had them in five different places, and then they all kind of converged together. I mean, how did you get that to happen like that? Because that had to just been like mind-boggling.
You know, it's funny. This was a book that was written in the middle of winter, in the middle of the night, with the wind coming in, and it just poured out of me for some reason. I had a kind of hard time getting started on it, and then all of a sudden it just clicked in, and the words started just pouring out like a river. And I had all five stories all completely together in my head, and it just kept pounding out, you know, going back and forth, back and forth. I didn't do any flashbacks like I did in my earlier books. I just did a straight real-time story within 12 hours. And that really helped the pressure cooker effect when you've got a lot going on in a very narrow time frame. So that's, for some reason, my head was able to manage it. I never write down the different storylines or anything like that. I just figure if I can keep it straight in my head, I'll be able to put it on paper so people can read it.
Absolutely. And I just want to let everybody know, if you want to call in and you want to go ahead and ask Shane anything, you know, the chat window is live open right now. You can register, type in any questions, or you can give us a call here at 347-436-3764. If you need to, and you know, ask Shane anything or type something in, and we'll get that going for you.
Oh, absolutely. Love to hear from listeners.
Yeah, well, you know, I sometimes you do, I guess. Sometimes you don't. It all depends. All depends on if you made him mad, I guess, right? But
that's even more fun.
That's that's true. Because what do we do if we screw something up? What do, Shane? That's, we blame the wife, right?
Oh, absolutely, blame the wife. That's the number one thing on the mission statement.
So your book came out July the 6th. How's it going? How's it going for you?
Going great. The sales seem to be, they really seem to be flying off the shelves, at least in the stores that I spot check around the country. For some reason, you know, this third book seems to be the charm. It's really taken off. The reviews have been very good. And they've all been along the lines of your most gracious comments about, they can't put the book down, which to me as an author is the greatest thing I can hear, that somebody is, you know, missing work or is late to work because they stayed up too late reading my book. I just love that. But the sales and just reader comments that come in through my email are just really positive, and I'm delighted by it all.
So when fans write you, what's kind of like the strangest question they kind of ask?
Usually they don't ask a lot of questions, but they tell me that, you know, I've never written to an author before, but something compelled me to do it. And it wasn't even a bill collector; it was just a regular reader type. So they tell me about it, and then I write back to them, thank you very much, and where did you hear about the book? Because, you know, I'd like to keep tabs on who's reading and why they find it, you know, a crowded bookstore. And half the time they write back and said, well, you're next to Tess Gerritsen in the bookshop, you know, because she's GE and I'm GE. And I meant to pick up Tess's new book, and I picked up yours by mistake. And I brought it home and I read it, and it was really, really good, so I thought I'd write. And I'm going to send Tess some flowers, honest to God. She has sold more books for me by mistake. That's a true story. I've told Tess that. It's phenomenal. That and the endorsements by other authors, Douglas Preston and Lee Child in particular, that really catches readers' eyes, and they decide to try it based on those endorsements. So I get a lot of comments from people saying, I'd never heard of you before, but I keep reading all these things from all the authors that I like about how good your work is, and it's enormously gratifying, and the word is slowly getting out there nationally that the books are there, and the author will actually talk to you if you write to him by email.
What a novel concept. So, Shane, we've got, actually have a caller on the line who wants to ask you a question. This is Terry from Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Go ahead, Terry.
Hey, Terry, how you doing?
Good, Shane. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Good. I have to admit I didn't know who you were before I knew that you were coming on the show tonight. But I looked up at your website, and I was reading about your books, and they look really good.
Oh,
like,
thank
I would
you.
Really love them.
Oh, that would be wonderful if you tried them out for me.
Well, I've been expanding my reading base.
Yeah.
Because I used to almost be afraid to read scary things.
Okay.
And stuff like that. But I've really expanded my horizons a lot in the last 6 months.
What kind of stuff did you like reading, or do you like reading?
Usually, like, light murder mysteries, which is what I write.
Okay, yeah.
But your books just sounded so good. And it's the kind of thing where I feel like it's more a psychological thing instead
yes,
of like
is.
Blood and guts and all that.
Yeah, it's easy to, you know, to look at my work and look at all the hype and the publicity and
mm-hmm.
think that it's just serial killers dismembering people.
Yeah.
And that's not it at all. I mean,
exactly.
there is death and tragedy and goriness in the book, but I keep the body counts low on purpose. I don't like to kill people without a very good reason, which, I mean, sounds silly, but it's really true. I take my work very seriously, and I respect the living. And if a monster is going to take them out, they're going to have a good reason, and the bad guys are going to get the monster in the end. But because of that, the violence is psychological. It's emotional violence. Rather than, you know, let's cut this guy's head off and, you know, use it as a bowling ball. Now, that doesn't interest me. What interests me is the readers being so engaged with a character that they're scared to death that something's going to happen to them.
Well, thank you so much, Terry, for your question. And that's the kind of sense that I got when I was reading Torn Apart was that... because there was multiple killers and multiple things that you have going on in there, and I can relate. And the good thing is I love to be able to relate to stories in areas that I either lived in or went through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used to live in Minneapolis and, you know, Black Falls, you know, Black River Falls.
Oh, yeah, Black River Falls and all that is right along the border.
And when you mentioned the cheese curds, I'm like, are you kidding me? I haven't had a cheese curd now in how long, and I thought it was great. I'm like, that was the best right there.
Oh,
but,
I love some cheese curds.
And I also want to say, too, that Brett says that you have the most perfectly trimmed mustache in the world, and it is a work of art. So I wanted to get that in because he typed that in the chat window, and I think you know who Brett is. I think that was kind of, you know, kind of funny that he kind of typed that in. But
oh, that's hilarious.
So,
I pay special attention to that mustache. It's my signature. I have no good signature, so I might as well use the mustache.
Well, you definitely... I have to say, I don't know if you spend, and I want to ask this question, did you spend more time in Torn Apart in writing the villain aspect or more of the heroic aspect?
Oh, boy, it's a good question. Because I have a core group of villains, but I've also got some other villains scattered around. I'd say probably more in the hero. Because I have an ensemble and I want to make sure everybody has plenty to do. You know, it would have been easier if I'd started this little project with just one hero and maybe a scattering of people who walk on every once in a while, you know, like a Jack Reacher novel. But police work is by its nature ensemble work. So I created five strong characters. My main character is the lead, of course, but her four compatriots have a lot to do, too. So I do spend probably a lot more time developing the heroic aspects of it than the villain part. But the villains are so much fun to write because you can you can let your nasty weasel side out to play and just infuse it into your villains and let them go crazy.
I will definitely say that your villains are one that is a scary part of the book. Would anyone pick this up?
Yeah.
We are on the phone right now with Shane Yerke and talking about his book, Torn Apart. If you want to call in, 347-423-3764 is the number. So, like a lot of authors, you probably are already working on book number four,
mm-hmm.
and maybe have the idea for book number five. So what can we expect from you here in book number four? What do you got coming out, or what do you got going on?
Well, at the moment, this book was the end of a 3-book contract with Kensington. They would like me to continue writing for them, which delights me no end. So at the moment, I've talking to my agent and the publisher to see what sort of thing they might want next. They're talking about maybe continuing this Emily series, or maybe receptive to an entire new series. So that's where our talks are right now. Is, you know, what does Shane want to do when he grows up? And I've got some ideas for a new, you know, big thriller series that may involve some of the characters, you know, from this series, or it may just be an entire standalone series. So I can't talk any further about that because I haven't even sat down to write out my outline and my proposal. But I'm really excited by the idea of trying something new while maybe continuing the other series. The cool thing about writing is there's a lots of possibilities. You know, you can do two things at once if you can get away with it, or just strike out something new and see what happens.
Absolutely. I think that is the great part about writing and reading, especially mystery, suspense, thriller books. You never know what's going to happen on the next page. That's the whole idea of reading it. You want to get to that next page and see what happens.
Yeah,
and that's
the way writers go, too, is you don't... If I wanted a regular, sane job, I would have just stayed at the newspaper business. This is insane, but insane in a good way, in that when you're done with your book, then you get another chance to go out and play and just concept right from the beginning and create a wild new world. So that's where I am right now, and it's a pretty cool place to be.
Now, if you ever have any kind of writer's block when you're trying to think, is there something that you do to get over that when you're sitting there thinking about your book and you're like, I don't really know how this is going to go, and you're sitting there thinking about it?
Oddly enough, physical activity seems to break. I never have any writer's block. Sometimes I might get lazy and not want to sit at the computer every day. But generally, once I start writing, I've never had any problem with continuing to write. But the rare occasion where I'm really stuck on a scene, I don't know where I want to take it, I'll either go out and get some coffee, I'll go out and mow the grass, work on the house, just do something physical, because it takes your brain away from that intense focus on the words and just, you know, lets your body open up. And when you're not thinking about the thing that's troubling you, you can let your subconscious work on it while you're doing something else. You know, like hitting my thumb with a hammer and stuff like that. So that's what I do. I mean, I really just...
a lot of honey-do lists there.
Oh, and yeah, I even make my own. Fortunately, my wife doesn't have to make them for me because, you know, there's always something going on around the house or stuff that you want to do, new project or whatever. And so that's what I do. And
I still consider that the honey-do list because I think that they subliminally put
right.
those things into your head and you're like, I must go mow the grass now. And you don't even know where
probably,
that came from.
Yeah, that's probably it. It's like, well, if I don't do it myself, somebody will tell me to do it, so I might as well do it myself and get
right.
all the credit.
Well, now I do have a question for you here. Do you do book tours, and how do you feel about them? This came from a listener in Thousand Oaks.
Oh, is that my editor calling again? Oh, man, I tell you. No, I do book tours. I've done one for each of the three books. I like doing them. I think it's real useful for meeting with bookstore owners, you know, who are the people who really get your, you know, get your work out there and keep your career going. And I like to meet fans. So I do book tours. I don't do real extensive ones because, you know, doing 40 or 50 stores in malls and sitting there for 2 hours each time doesn't really sell a lot of books, and you don't meet all that many people. So I tend to do the local Chicago area bookstores heavily, and I do stores and events in some of the major cities, you know, New York, L.A., whatever, especially if they're tied around the book conventions that I go to. So like Thriller Fest was in New York, so I did some sales stuff there. San Francisco is the home of BoucherCon Mystery Convention this fall, so I'll try to get there a day early and set up some bookstore things there. And then while my wife and I are traveling, I'll if it's a good opportunity to spend an evening at a bookstore doing an event, I'll go ahead and do that. But I don't try to schedule 40 or 50 stores anymore. It's just, it's kind of counterproductive, and it wastes their time and mine.
Right. Well, I got another question here. This is from your friend Brett.
He says,
how has your writing evolved from the first book, Blown Away, to now your third book, Torn Apart?
It's actually gotten better with each book. The way I describe it is, you know, I love all my children equally, all three books, but this third child is really my favorite because the writing just got so much better. First book, you love it to pieces because you wrote it, and I thought it was pretty good. But if you go back, yeah, that was 5 years ago. If I went back and reread it, I'm sure I would go, ugh, I wrote that, ugh, I wrote that. You know, I would have done it maybe a little differently. The second book, I got better at the writing, you know, because I had been through it for the first time. And so the second book just got better. By the time the third book came along, this one, the first two were under my belt. I was confident that I could finish the book, you know, on deadline without any problem. So I spent more time on the writing craft this time. And it seemed to really work. I was more conscious of my word choices. I spent a lot of time with the character names. And it all seemed to pay off. I'm really happy with this level of writing, and I think I've finally found my voice. You know, your first couple of books are, it's like everybody's voice. Every author you admire, every book you've ever read, you're subconsciously kind of putting that style into your book. You're not taking anything from them, but it's that kind of style. By my third book, and in this case, Torn Apart, the Shane voice came out. This is the voice I like. It's a very high-speed voice where I've got a lot of things going on, but I pay close attention to the character development as well because I really like the characters, and I think that all came together in this book. So hopefully by 4th and 5th and 28th books, I'll get better and better and better because you can never be perfect as a writer. There's always something you miss, but you can always strive to do a little bit better and be better for your readers.
Absolutely. I got one more quick question here that someone just typed in.
Okay.
How do you, and you might have answered a little bit of it, but how do you develop your characters in terms of their believability?
I spend a lot of time talking to cops. You know, this is a cop series. I spend a lot of time talking to cops. I grew up in a police family, so I'm familiar with the culture, and I read a lot of the trade magazines and trade journals. I keep in regular touch with, you know, police officers I respect, and just ask them to tell me stories, and then I bounce my ideas off them. If I have Officer Emily or Detective Emily in this situation, is it believable? Does it work? And one of the greatest compliments I've gotten is from a retired state trooper in Indiana who wrote to me and said, I could swear you're a cop of 30 years. You know the police stuff down cold, and it's just, it's like your writing is like the guys I work with. And that to me was just, I was a wonderful compliment because it meant I got it. I understand
right.
The culture, and I'm able to transmit it to readers.
Right. All right. Well, I'll tell you, Shane, time is up right now for you on this one, and so what we're going to do is we're going to transition this right over, and I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about Torn Apart. It was fascinating. I tell everyone to go out there right now, go to your local store, go get Torn Apart. You're not going to be disappointed whatsoever. Shane's going to stay on a little bit, and he's going to come back on the SmackDown because we're kind of emailing back and forth, and he has some pretty strong opinions about the SmackDown. But just like a thriller book, we're going to jump right in now. We're going to bring our next guest on, Scott Nicholson. And Scott is actually writing an article monthly for Suspense Magazine. Scott, it is great to have you on. Appreciate it. And how you doing?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me on. Glad you got a new show going.
I know. We got
Scott, it's Matt here. I wanted to thank you for coming on as well, since I was kind of reading through your bio, and I know you've been writing a ton of stuff. You seem pretty busy, so I appreciate you coming on with us. For people who may not be familiar, I'll just kind of run through how busy Scott actually is. So you've published, upwards of 10 novels now? Is that where we're at, Scott?
Yeah. Got a bunch more coming, but just trying to steadily lay them out there.
And,
I got a stack of them.
That's good, because I mean, for everyone, Scott also has over 60 short stories. He does poetry. He does nonfiction magazine articles, and is a former dishwasher, carpenter, painter, musician, baseball card dealer. So a lot going on there in the background. So one thing I wanted to touch base with you is we were talking ebooks earlier, and you as you write an article for Suspense Magazine, you offer advice and give insight into some indie writers. Wanted you to talk about some of the obstacles you ran across early in your careers. As you said, you came across a lot of objections. Any advice that you can give to aspiring authors to stick with it and things that they can do?
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting because Shane's with Pinnacle, and I was with Pinnacle for 6 books, so he's kind of taken over for me at Pinnacle. He was a former journalist. I'm still a journalist, so I'm carrying on the torch there, so I think we've just kind of swapped places a little bit. But, I had back in the mid-90s, you could still get rejection slips from actual publishers and editors, and I racked up a few hundred and was getting read by good agents, and just they would explain why this stuff wasn't working, but it was obviously good enough to where, you know, you can read a paragraph and tell if somebody can write a sentence. And then so I was good enough to get that next level, and then that next part's the hard part, the learning curve, where you just have to lay out your hundreds of thousands of words, and like Shane was talking about, eventually you start finding your own voice. And somewhere as my fifth novel, no, I was writing my fifth novel when my fourth one got accepted by Pinnacle, and I sold it through the slush and with no agent, although I did have an agent reading something else, and he ended up being my agent. But that was back, you know, even 8 years ago, and the world has changed so much since then that it's hard for me to believe, but at the time it was real exciting. And, you know, my books did well, and I was treated very fairly. And just somewhere along the ways, things kind of went off the rails, and I just really wasn't happy with direction, and I probably was not giving the editor the things they wanted, because I'm a little bit passive-aggressive about my artistic vision, which doesn't necessarily mesh with commercial considerations. And one thing led to another, so I went like a couple of years without any books out there, and then I was looking around saying, well, how do I get back in the game? You know, I'm still writing. I got these stacks of books. What do I do? I'd left my agent and now have another one, but at the time I had to do something. And then, hey, this ebook thing's coming along, and a whole new world opened up. There were no rules. It's still inventing itself. So I just jumped in and still floating.
So Scott, here, Matt, we got a quick question here I want to get in. Someone just typed a question. So how do you decide to group your short stories and gather them in one book? So in other words, how do you determine, you know, which stories you're going to put together under that one roof?
Well, that's odd, because now my story count's probably up to 70 or 80, but I did put out the story collections in ebook in exact line with the three paper versions of my collections that have come out. And then now I'm thinking, well, that was kind of silly because I was tied to these dead, fixed things, and ebooks aren't fixed. You can revise them at any time. So right now I'm breaking everything up to type them by genre. I've got a mystery collection I'm putting together, a supernatural collection, a pure horror collection, a dark fantasy science fiction. I wrote all over the map when I was learning, so, you know, these things. And then a young adult fantasy collection. If you add it all up, it's me, but if you're only like one kind of thing, then maybe you'll like one of these. So basically, the short answer is, right now I'm redoing everything.
Do you have a room at home wallpapered up all those rejection letters?
No, I have a. This is an interesting story because my first novel I've rewritten for 14 years, and I'm going to release it this fall, and I'm going to have this little challenge. If I break the top 100 on Kindle, I'm going to burn all the rejection slips on YouTube. And there's several hundred there, but the character in the book is a writer whose book keeps getting rejected, so it's sort of a autobiographical, metafictional book. You know, my agent said, make it more like Stephen King, I like this, and then I rewrote it, and he didn't like it, or he had forgotten or something, so that's kind of when it went off in my head that, you know, I got to find my own path.
Of course. Well, so tell us a little bit about Drummer Boy. It's a mix of supernatural and mystery. Kind of give us a little more depth into that.
There's a local, I use a lot of Appalachian legends in my books. As a journalist, I get sent out every Halloween and so I go find the local haunted place and write a story about it. So and also collect folk legends just as kind of a hobby. And there's a local legend here of Civil War. Well, we're in the remote Blue Ridge Mountains, and up here we were kind of out of the war. That's where deserters from both sides would gather to hide and not be assassinated by executed by their armies. And they didn't have, and the people here were just kind of just leave us alone. And so they'd hide out in the caves. And apparently, this allegedly, according to legend, there's a cave where they were hanging out together and apparently got trapped in there and died, and you can still hear their tools and their mess kits clinking and deep in there. So I took that legend and spun it into the story of these three misfit kids that kind of discover the legend, and the legend starts coming to life.
Now, is it true what I've read and seen about the snake charmers and the church services, is that a big deal out that way?
That's more in Tennessee, Kentucky, and yeah, it's real. I mean, there are really churches that do that, but, you know, not really. That's more remote now. It's more of a real secluded thing, but it's real, and whatever. I say freedom of religion. If that's your thing, go for it. Just don't do it to your kids.
So we got another question here for you, Scott. We got this from Ryan in California. She writes, who's writing more? Do you enjoy writing the hero more or the villain more? Kind of like the same question I asked Shane.
Yeah, well, I think Shane hit it right that, you know, in your villain, you let out your dark side and you can just unleash your depravity and just see how much you can get away with. But I'm also not a gore person. I'm more of the supernatural suspense, the mystery, and, you know, oddly enough, you might not know it from looking at my book covers or descriptions, but the spiritual journeys of the characters are really fascinating to me, and how their different religious philosophies deal with these supernatural events.
It's on, yeah.
It's interesting because it's part of our country is the fact that we have so many unique regions, and being on the West Coast, that's just something that's we don't get to see or hear a lot about. So to read it in your books and get that whole feel and flavor of it brings it to life, especially for me. That's a huge factor when I read books, is to kind of get that. Throw myself into that world, and that's a huge part of it.
Yeah, I've kind of lived a little bit further along the lines of the United States than Matt has stuck out here in poor California most of his life. I've, you know, experienced the Midwest and the, you know, and some of the East Coast and the, you know, upper Midwest and the cold. So, yeah, we can't feel too sorry for Matt being out here in California his whole life with the great weather. So there's no tears being cried on that one. Sorry, dude.
My dad's from Charlotte, so I got a little North Carolina running through me. But well, since you mentioned unleashing your dark side, I mean, do you ever scare yourself when you write?
Yeah, not so much scared as when you're really hunched over and you're typing out and it's really going good. And I think most writers have this feeling, and the world kind of falls away, and the world on the screen is the real world. And then when you come out of it and your gut's knotted up and you're kind of hunched up and shaking and stuff, and you go, wow, that was nice. Let's do that again. I guess they call it the zone.
The zone. Well, I mean, it kind of in that same zone is you've got these graphic novels that you're involved with too. Did you grow up a comic book fan? I mean, they look kind of on the horror side. What are you working on with that right now?
Well, that was probably my first creative impulse was, you know, crayons and paper, and then seeing real comic books and we could fold notebook paper and make our own. So it was like, hey, we can make a comic book. I've always been that kind of like, oh, we can make our own entertainment. You know, I used to be a musician, and just anything. I was like, I don't want to sit there and watch. If I sit there and watch a band perform, I want to be up there, not necessarily for the vanity of it, but I want to be participating and creating. So I guess just whatever's going on, I want to be doing something and just making something up. So I kind of got out of comics for a while, but lately I was noticing I had some of my writer friends were getting into them, and obviously they were all hitting movies. Comic book movies were getting big, and I was thinking, I'll do this backwards. I'll take my novels and turn them into comic books, and maybe they'll get turned into movies that way. And actually have the little Dirt series where I play a character, Digger. I'm actually up here in the comic as a character and introducing the short stories that are adapted. And Cuber, the artist, is fantastic, and we're putting together the trade paperback right now. It should be out in a week or two, but we do have digital copies of that available and the old paper comics, but that market is really hurt, and you think the book market is down. Single comics issues are really down compared to what they were in, say, the 80s.
Absolutely. I can definitely attest to that. I'm a huge comic book fan, especially the DC and the Batman. Just want to remind everybody, too, that we are talking right now live to Scott Nicholson, author of The Drummer Boy. If you want to call in, it is 347-426-3764. We got about 7 minutes left with Scott before we start going into our next segment. So, you know, come on in and jump in now. So, how did you sort of get yourself, how did you sort of celebrate after all those rejection letters, finally getting that letter that says, we believe in you and we want to publish your work? What'd you do?
Jumped in the air from a sitting position without using my feet. But it was like, it was a phone call for an anthology and the Writers of the Future contest. If you write speculative fiction, it's an awesome contest, writersofthefuture.com. Look it up, big prize money, and it's legit. And they take you to L.A. for a week. And the editor called me, and I was like, I thought it was one of those prank phone calls. And he's like, I really want your story. So I did, and I went upstairs and counted my rejection slips. At that time was 105 before I sold my first short story. And then the novels, I don't know, it's 300 or 400. I've lost count. But I've got all those piled up. I may go back and look at them one day. It's interesting. But, you know, the first 3 or 4 kind of stung a little bit when I thought I was a genius. But then I realized it wasn't a genius. Life got a lot easier. And just realize you just stick with it. That's part of the game.
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what we hear from a lot of authors is, you know, your 105 rejection letter is definitely not out of the realm of impossibility that somebody can get, and you just have to hang in there. But with you doing a lot of the indie and the e-books, are those rejection letters going to get lower when people are going to say, you know what, after 5, this, I'm just going to go ahead and I'm publishing it myself because I'm not going to sit here and wait 2, 3, 4 years before, you know, my books get read. I'm just going to do it myself and see what happens.
Yeah, that's a legitimate point, but, you know, that'd be another one-hour show at least to get into the intricacies of are you ready? Do you have something to offer? I know my books after, you know, they were good enough for mid-list mass market paperback, so I know I'm not a bestseller, but I believe in my vision, and I believe my vision deserves to be out there, and I have it edited. I'm a professional freelance editor, so I know how to do that, but I also put other eyes on it, and I believe I aspire to a product that's more professional than New York's. I'm getting all my files professionally designed. I love my covers. Neil Jackson at Ghostwriter Publications does them, and you know, I'm just putting together my own teams and working with translators to get my books out across the world and just doing it myself. But I know what it takes, and I believe I have the skills to put out a product that the reader deserves. And the readers are the boss now. You know, they're the ones who say you're worth $3 or you're not worth $3. If you're not, maybe I'll drop down to $1 and maybe you won't pay that, but that's your right and I support it. My job is to deliver you the best experience possible because you deserve the best.
Tell us a little more about getting it translated, and like, you know, you're trying to get in Spanish and Polish versions and what other countries. What's that process like?
Well, I've sold some paper rights on my own where the publisher is doing the translating. Those books are slated to be out in Spain and Poland, but I just find my own translators. Some of them are professionals. Some of them are writers in other languages who are bilingual. I can't do it myself, but I'll just give them a 10% royalty. With an ebook, you never go out of print, which is the major, major advantage of this era. You know, my 5 books with Kensington are out of print. I don't have the rights. They're dead. They don't benefit me. They don't benefit the publisher. The readers can't get to them unless they buy a used copy, and they're usually high priced. And so it's pointless. It's very frustrating. Now every book can be in print forever, all the time. A reader can go find it, and it's good for the writer and it's good for the readers. The only person it's not good for is the publishing industry. But don't tell them that. They don't want to hear it.
we'll keep that to suspense radio for right now. John, you got any other questions?
Let's see. If people want to get a hold of you, and your website is what, hauntedcomputer.com, correct?
Yeah, I got a lot of articles about my experiences and writing advice, except for now I realize I don't know very much, but I've got a lot of art. I'm starting to put up audio files and, trying to be multimedia and just have fun with it all. It's just so wide open right now. There's no reason not to. I'm working on a zombie collection, and I have links to, I read one of the stories, I can't have the capacity to embed the links into the digital file, but I do have links to the audio and links to our comic book art for the comic we're developing. So I'm really embracing this multimedia experience that ebooks are going to become in maybe as fast as 3 years. I mean, there's already, you know, I don't know if you saw that Pillars of the Earth app, but it was stunning. I mean, I think that's the way books are going.
Well, Scott, I'll tell you, it's been great having you on. And what we're going to do is we're going to bring Shane back on, and we're going to start the SmackDown. So, Matt, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody what we're smacking down here in the Suspense SmackDown ring?
Well, this show, we wanted to kind of discuss or argue or see where we all at as far as actors who have transformed the Jack Ryan character from Tom Clancy's novels over into the big screen. So we've got Alec Baldwin in Hunt for Red October. We've got Harrison Ford, who did Patriot Games in Clear and Present Danger. And then I don't even think we need to mention Ben Affleck for Some of All Fears.
No,
but,
we're not going to mention him.
Okay, we'll just take him off the list because that was awful. I don't know.
So here we go.
What do you think? Well,
so here we go. So we're going to go. So I'm going to start this here. So we're going to say now the Suspense SmackDown. It's going to be the best Jack Ryan character. It's going to be either Harrison Ford in Clear and Present Danger or Patriot Games, or Alec Baldwin in Hunt for Red October.
I'm already giving you instructions in the dressing room. I expect a tough, clean fight. Protect yourself at all times. The question from the challenger.
All right, Shane, let's get it on. Who are you picking?
Oh, got to go with Harrison Ford. He's the man, the legend.
All
reason
right,
I
Scott?
Like him so much is Action Man.
All right, Scott, pick one. Here you go.
I don't think a Baldwin should win anything, but I'm going to have to go with Alec Baldwin just because that's the only one of those I've seen.
Oh.
All right, Matt.
I think it's got to be Harrison Ford. It's too hard to turn away from Harrison. I could argue Baldwin a little bit, but I got to go Harrison Ford.
Well, you know, I'm gonna make it 50-50. I'm going to go Alec Baldwin because I think, and maybe it's because The Hunt for Red October, I think, was a better movie with Sean Connery in it, but I think that that was maybe the closer. I've read some Jack Ryans here by Tom Clancy. I think that that might be the closer depiction of Jack Ryan. So that's why I'm kind of picking Alec Baldwin.
Well, the reason I like Harrison is, of course, we all loved him in Star Wars and everything, and he just went from there. And early Harrison was great, but the later roles he's taken, he's just too old for a lot of these action movies anymore. You know, it's kind of like Grandpa creaking along the sidewalk there, going, I got to catch up here and like that. But, man, his early stuff was just, awesome.
I could argue one thing about Baldwin is he brought a little comedic portion to his role in Hunt for Red October. Like he did a little mimicry to Sean Connery's accent. I call it campy, but it was actually a pretty good job on that front too.
Oh, campy's great when it comes to that stuff. I like Alec a whole bunch as an actor in 30 Rock and some of the other stuff that he does, but he strikes me as a great bad guy. I mean, I could see him like in a classic crime, 1950s crime noir thriller, as a heavy. And because he's got that great face and that big kind of like big chunky head and the big shoulders and everything. I'd love to see him in something like that.
Well, so far, I'm sitting here looking at the chat, and so far it looks like it's kind of split a little bit. We kind of see a little bit of, no one does righteous indignation like Harrison Ford, but we do have John Gilstrap who said Alec Baldwin was closer to the Clancy vision.
So I don't know if Clancy liked anybody. Did he?
Well, that's, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what really he likes. I mean, I'm a huge Viking fan. He tried to buy the Vikings. That didn't really work out. That kind of blew up like Jack Ryan in one of the books. But I still think that Hunt for Red October was a better maybe it was closer to the book than it was, but I just thought Alec Baldwin, I think, did a little better job, and Harrison Ford is a good actor, but if we're just talking overall actor, then yeah, you go Harrison Ford, but when just talking this one character, it's kind of tough. It is kind of tough to put Harrison Ford out of your mind of Star Wars and Indiana Jones and things like that and put him into a character.
You're seeing him in all those different roles while you're applying it to the Jack Ryan role. Actually, as good as those two are, I still don't think either of them were really what I thought of as Jack Ryan when I was reading, the whole series. I stopped reading Clancy in the later stuff because he just got so wordy.
Very technical about how a plane worked and we really didn't need to know?
Yeah, and I don't mind like 3 pages of that, but when it gets to 9 or 20, it's like, okay, editor, next.
Absolutely.
I also thought that John Clark, role was hugely miscast because that was Willem Dafoe was the one who played him, and that was disappointment for me. That was
same here.
Yeah, he didn't look like the Navy SEAL. He almost. Should have been a Jack Reacher look, the way I would envision it, kind of a guy.
Yeah, that's how I saw him, too, as a kind of an older Jack Reacher, a guy who's been around for a long time. Very, not necessarily tall, but very big and could take over the screen.
Take over any bar he walks into.
Well, guys, unfortunately, it looks like, the SmackDown here is going to end. It looks like it's probably, I guess, a little bit more Harrison Ford, I think, on the chat room. So we might have to give it to him. But I do want to go ahead. You know, well, you know, I don't win everything. You know, there's not a lot of things I do win. But what I want to do is right now, I want to go ahead and I want to thank Shane Yerke right now. I want you to check out his book, Torn Apart. You can also check him out at Shane, and his last name is spelled not like it sounds, GERICKE.com. Check out Torn Apart. Go to his website for anything. Scott Nicholson, he has the book, The Drummer Boy, that's coming out, that has come out. You can check him out at hauntedcomputer.com. Guys, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It was a great pleasure, and thanks a lot. We can, you know, we can't wait to see what's next out of you.
My pleasure to be here.
Matt.
All right, guys.
I got to talk to Scott separately sometime because he sounds really cool.
All right. Well, you guys have a good one. So, Matt, let's go ahead and talk about what's going to come up here starting on Friday. We're going to have a star-studded show again coming up here. We have John Gilstrap and Gail Lenz, both New York Times bestselling authors, that are going to be joining us Friday night, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right here on Suspense Radio Live. It just gets more and more fun as we do this. What do you think?
Oh, it's definitely fun. We're going to have to leave everyone in suspense as far as what our SmackDown will be on Friday, but we've got some great ideas for the upcoming shows. And to remind everyone, we are on every Tuesday and Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I like to do the West Coast bias. If you're on the East Coast, obviously add your 3 hours. But we will be on Blog Talk Radio, and we will generally be interviewing two authors, aspiring new and exciting authors, as well as some established bestsellers. And, of course, our featured SmackDown, which we always look forward to as well, and our book reviews at the opening of the show.
Well, and do like Jeff, a little content.
Go ahead. Well, sounds like we lost John again. Another technical error there. But if you have any ideas as far as books that you want reviewed or...
Can you hear me? Am I back?
You're here.
I'm back.
Telling everyone that
I don't
know what
happened.
Suggestions for authors they want us to try and get on the show, you can always email John at Suspense Magazine, or Matt, that's M-A-T-T, at Suspense Magazine. And, of course, any books that if you want to call in and talk about, we always welcome your caller input as well. And,
so you got me. Am I back on now? You got me?
You're on.
All right. I don't know what happened. I don't know what's going on with the Internet, but, you know, you keep raving about this California thing out here. I don't know if I'm feeling it yet. But, yeah, absolutely. You can, you know, John at SuspenseMagazine.com. Matt at SuspenseMagazine.com. You can check us out, SuspenseMagazine.com. We're all over the place, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter. And, you know, we're just going to keep bringing it as long as the people want to keep reading it.
And also, for you aspiring authors, we do have people on staff that are there to help with any questions you have as far as getting started, writing, tips, techniques, things of that nature. And we also have a self-publishing group, Suspense Publishing, to help you get started with ebooks and things of that nature. So we're always welcoming input and any questions you might have as well.
All right, well, let's give it a closing here. It's been a great one. And we will see you all on Friday at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Matt, have a good one.
Talk to you later.